This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are delighted to be with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. You were talking about oil. The cover of your book, Crimes Against Nature, has an oil derrick behind the White House. Is that the one you picked for rhetorical reasons, or is it really that serious?
Well, that really is the message behind this book, is that corporations are, that there's an excess of corporate power in this country today. And, you know, from the beginning of time, and it's kind of in vogue in the White House to say, well, we've got to be frightened of big government. But our most visionary political leaders throughout American history have been much more frightened of corporate power.
Like?
Well, Teddy Roosevelt, you know, let's say just some Republicans. Teddy Roosevelt said that our country would never be destroyed by a foreign enemy, but our democratic institutions would be subverted by what he called malefactors of great wealth who would erode them from within. Dwight Eisenhower, in his most famous speech, warned of the of domination of our country by the military-industrial complex. Abraham Lincoln said in 1863, at the height of the Civil War, he said, you know, I have the South before me and I have the bankers behind me, and for my country I fear the bankers more. The Franklin Roosevelt, you know, who of course is a Democrat, said that the domination of government by corporations is fascism. That's how he defined it. And, you know, communism is the domination of government by, or business by government. Fascism is the domination of government by business. And
well, and Mussolini agreed with him.
And Mussolini said that, you know, that fascism should not be called fascism. It should be called corporatism, because it's the merger of state and corporate interest.
Is that what's happening now?
And what we're seeing, you know, we are seeing an erosion of our democratic institutions that's very, very disturbing in this country. And I want to say this. There's no stronger advocate for free market capitalism than myself. I believe the free market is the most efficient and democratic way to distribute the goods of the land. But in a true free market economy, you can't make yourself rich without making your neighbors rich and without enriching your community. What polluters do is they make themselves rich by making everybody else poor. They raise standards of living for themselves by lowering quality of life for everybody else, and they do that by escaping the discipline of the free market, by forcing the public to pay their production costs. When those coal companies dump mercury into our air, or ozone and particulates, or the stuff that causes acid rain, they are imposing costs on the rest of us through asthma attacks on our children, our inability to go fishing, that should, in a true free market economy, be reflected in the price of the company's product when it makes it to market, the electricity. But what the utilities do is they do the same thing every polluter does, which is to use their political clout to escape the discipline of the free market and force the public to pay their production costs. Corporations are externalizing machines. They want to figure out the way to externalize their costs and pawn them out on the public. And that's what all pollution is. And the federal environmental laws were all meant to restore free market capitalism in our country, to force actors in the marketplace to pay the true cost of bringing their product to market. I don't even consider myself an environmentalist anymore. I'm a free marketeer. I go out into the marketplace and I find the polluters and I say to them, we're going to force you to internalize your costs the same way that you internalize your profits. Because when somebody cheats the free market, it distorts the entire marketplace and none of us gets the benefits of the efficiency and the democracy that the free market otherwise promises our country. Now, Can I say one other thing to kind of finish that point, which is that Americans have to understand there's a huge difference between free market capitalism, which democratizes our country, and the kind of corporate crony capitalism, which is as antithetical to democracy and efficiency and prosperity in America as it is in Nigeria. And we are seeing corporate crony capitalism now on Capitol Hill, where large corporations have a disproportionate advantage in terms of dictating our national policy. And the White House has become the epicenter for this disturbing trend.
You mentioned Franklin Roosevelt. Roosevelt said something important years ago about not having nothing to fear but fear itself. And it seems that one of the challenges that we're currently faced with is a climate of fear. And it goes to this notion of weapons of mass destruction and people who want to kill us. But you point out in ways that I hadn't seen made as clear before that a lot of those weapons of mass destruction are sitting among us in the form of chemical plants, in the form of nuclear power plants, and that contrary to what I would have thought, given expenditures, that nothing's been done about that in the last 3 years.
That's right. You know, we've spent $200 billion now in Iraq. What it's done is really distracted us from the real national security issues, what ought to be our priorities, which is, one, rebuilding Afghanistan and making it an example or paradigm to the Islamic world and catching Osama bin Laden, and those funds were diverted. But also, to protect our infrastructure here at home. We have 10 million cargo containers coming into this country every year, and less than 1% of them is ever inspected. You could ship a nuclear weapon in and with no problem into our country. A terrorist could. But also, the poor man's, what the head of the FBI anti-terrorism division calls the poor man's atomic bombs, are our nuclear power plants and our chemical factories, which are virtually unprotected.
What about all this homeland security stuff?
You know what? The homeland security is targeted towards airport security, but we're doing almost nothing to make corporations, large corporations, who also happen to be the contributors to the president, to shoulder their part of the load. And I show this in my book, how we have 15,000 chemical plants in this country. There's almost 200 of them where even a small arms charge from a 50 caliber or much smaller arms could puncture, for example, a chlorine tank and kill millions of people. Over a million people, according to EPA, there's over 200 of them, where even a small accident, easy to trigger, would kill over a million people. There's one, the Kearney Chemical Company in New Jersey, that each one of these plants has to do a worst case scenario, and their worst case scenario is that 12 to 14 million people could be killed by a chlorine eruption at their facility. How many guards do they have? They have no guards, and anybody can walk into that facility anytime they want. The Pittsburgh Tribune did a story where they sent a reporter out to 60 of the worst chemical plants in our country to see if he could penetrate them. In every case, he was able to walk in without being challenged and sit near, big tanks of deadly, deadly chemicals. And John Corzine, who's the senator from New Jersey, where a lot of these plants are, immediately after 9/11, I proposed a law that was passed unanimously through committee that would have created a chemical security law in this country that would have forced those chemical companies to look at their own vulnerabilities and then take steps, prudent steps, to protect themselves. Well, all the Republicans on the committee voted against it. Then the chemical industry, over the next 3 months, gave them $850,000, and the White House came in at the behest of the American Chemical Council and persuaded them to now oppose the law that they had originally supported. And so there is no protection of chemical plants. Not only that, but at the behest of the chemical industry, the White House ordered EPA to abdicate its own statutory authority under the Clean Air Act to inspect these facilities for security breaches. So we are actually a lot less safe now than we were on 9/11. The nuclear power companies are even, at least as great a threat. We have 104 nuclear power plants in this country, and at this point, they are unguarded against terrorist attack. That may sound like an exaggeration, but read my book. Every single permit for every one of these plants has a provision in it that says that the operators of this plant have no duty nor responsibility to protect this plant against attacks by enemies of the United States.
That's unbelievable.
And they're not doing it. That's exactly right.
So who has the responsibility?
Well, that's the question. If you ask the nuclear power plant operators who has the responsibility, they'll say it's the federal government. But if you go to the Department of Homeland Security and say, are you protecting nuclear power plants, they'll say, no, we don't have an army. And if you go to FEMA, they'll say, we don't have an army. If you go to the Pentagon and say, is it your responsibility? They'll say, no, it's not our responsibility, and we're not doing it. So there's nobody who is accountable. And, you know, in the industry, it's really just another subsidy to the nuclear industry that they're not required to protect themselves. And many companies like Indian Point Power Plant, which is, you know, just 22 miles north of New York City, it's the worst operated plant in the country. It's the oldest operating facility. But they have the guards at that plant. All of these plants regularly stage, the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, regularly stages mock attacks on these plants. In 50% of the cases, the attackers, who can consist of three vandals, because they can't be enemies of the United States, but three vandals who are not trained in guerrilla tactics, who are not armed as the guerrillas would be, and are able to penetrate the plant and trigger a catastrophic release of radiation. And in all of those cases, the plant is given 6 months' notice of the time and date of the attack, and they still cannot withstand it. So imagine if, you know, real terrorists of the sophistication and the organization and the suicidal willingness of the ones who attacked us on, you know, on 9/11 ever hit one of these plants. It would be very, very easy for them to trigger a catastrophic release. In the case of Indian Point Power Plant, the spent fuel pools contain 17 times the amount of radiation that was released at Chernobyl. And according to the NRC, 100% of that radiation would be released if there was a fire in the spent fuel pools. Well, Foster Zay, who was one of the chiefs of security at the plant and is now a whistleblower, claimed that in mock attacks, he could enter the perimeter fence regularly. And from the perimeter fence, it would take him less than 40 seconds to get to the spent fuel pools and plant explosive charges around it. That these plants are not protected, and you know, we're searching for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, but we have 15,000 of them in this country that are unguarded.
This is Robert F. Kennedy, Jr. Bill Russell and I, Paula Gordon, will be with him in a moment when we return.